To order. Welcome, everybody. Dr. Ransdell has some announcements before we begin with the agenda.
Now, a few things very quickly. First of all, the board members may not even be aware of this, but you sometimes hear our reports about all the projects we do over the summer, particularly the ongoing in-ground electrical service conversion of taking a in some cases, 60, 80-year-old in-ground electrical service and replacing it, and that's been an ongoing deferred maintenance project for us. Well, there's one stretch that we hadn't yet gotten to, and it came up to bite us this week that feeds the Fine Arts Center, Alvin Wilson Fine Arts Center, and we had electrical failure in the lines, and that building is having to be closed until Tuesday evening. We believe we can get a generator installed and fixed and get the building back online, but it's going to be summer before we can actually repair the electrical lines or replace the electrical system that feeds that building. And so the faculty and students who have classes in FAC are coming up with Plan B for the next few days. So we're trying to work through that one, but we can't use the building because the electrical service powers everything from water flow to lights to safety and fire protection and all of that. So, David Lee, thanks for
anytime
fielding that curveball right in the middle of the week. So, but we're on it. We're on it. The second thing is the provost may elaborate a bit more in our Academic Affairs Committee report, but as you know, we've had some pretty good success in recent years with Goldwater Selections, which are the premier national, international scholarship for students, undergraduate students in the sciences, and each institution can nominate up to four. Doesn't matter who you are, whether you're Harvard or Stanford or MIT or us, you can nominate four. And it's very rare to get multiple selections. And we learned last week that three students were selected and one was an honorable mention. So all four were recognized and three were selected to receive a Goldwater. And that's Ivy League competition. So we're and three of them have connections to the Gatton Academy, the honorable mention and two of the selections. So there are sophomores and Gatton Academy seniors. So again, just continues to point out how valuable that Gatton Academy is to our intellectual environment on this campus. So just an incredible performance and a real tribute to our faculty and Ogden College of Science and Engineering.
Only 17 universities in the country.
Well, there you go. Good. So some important things, and we'll have plenty of opportunity to elaborate on this going forward, but you saw the announcements we made this week. We'll recognize him at a later point, but congratulations to John Osborne on his retirement, and to Ann Mead and Brian Russell for picking up duties that heretofore have been in John's division of the university, and also to Brian Meredith, who will come onto the Administrative Council with his work and with a new title of Chief Enrollment and Graduation Officer. So we continue to make moves. That particular one was primarily about reducing executive positions and driving what has heretofore gone into a salary into reducing the budget cut for everybody on campus. Those are moves made this past week.
Next, we'll have the Finance and Budget Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today, we do have a quorum of our committee, myself, Ms. Tigden, and, of course, James. So we can proceed today. There is going to be just a little change-up. Bailey Jordan, who is to make a report to us on our audit, got detained in, not detained, that's a bad word, isn't it? Late.
It sounds like Homeland Security guy.
Yeah, that's what I did.
I'm sure
in Chicago, and is in flight right now to Nashville and will be arriving about 10. So we're hoping we're going to squeeze his in at the end, if not our representative from academic, the administration will be Ann. So the first item is was acceptance. And Ann, how do you want to handle just the agenda there with the four items, the action items?
Yeah, just, we'll take them individually, and if you want to go ahead and get your motion. And
okay, all right. So the first item up, if you'll turn to your item 1.1, the accountant's report on application of agreed upon procedures, NCAA compliance report, action item number one. Do I have a motion to bring that to the floor?
So moved.
So moved and seconded.
Second.
We now are the report, Ann.
Yes, sir. We have enough senior, not being offensive, but senior members of this board that I don't have to do as many introductory remarks. We don't have any people that are new to this process. So you're familiar with that Crow Horwath does, in fact, help us comply with NCAA requirements. And the first item is, in fact, agreed upon procedures necessary for NCAA compliance. You have a hard copy of the report. It is not an audit, but it is numerous items that must be prepared by management, which is business management in the Department of Athletics, and then checks and balances may be the appropriate word, done by Crow. John Shoemaker is here from Crow to go ahead and elaborate on this process.
ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to present in front of this committee today. My name is John Shoemaker. I'm with Crow Horwath. I've been affiliated with the firm since 2006. I'm a University of Kentucky graduate. I would like to introduce my colleague, and I've been on the account for 2 years. This will be my third year working with Western Kentucky University, and it's been a pleasure. I'd like to introduce my colleague, Brad Shelley.
Brad, if you'd stand up.
Brad comes to the team with 10 years of government and higher education experience. We're going to welcome Brad with open arms to the team. He's bringing a lot of experience to the team, so that'll be fantastic. So today, we're here to present the Western Kentucky University audited financial statements for the TV and the radio stations, along with the NCAA agreed upon procedures. All three of these reports that we're presenting today are compliance in nature. The TV and radio stations are required by the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. The NCAA agreed upon procedures are required for all Division I schools. First, I would like to start with the TV and radio.
I'm sorry, we started with agreed upon procedures.
We can go with the agreed upon procedures first. My apologies. So the NCAA agreed upon procedures, the NCAA provides us a list. So if you look through the report, they're numbered. There's a list of compliance testing that we have to perform. If you look through the report, there's very, very few findings. There was only three that were notable. Number 13, 42, and 46. 42 and 46, both of those were findings noted for W-2 versus payroll. And the issues there were that the university is on a fiscal year 630, June 30th, and the W-2s are on calendar year. So there were some variances, but they're explained based on the two different year endings. Number 13 had some small variances with ticket sales, and it's all explained there in the report. It looks like football had a variance of 725, men's basketball about 1,000, and women's basketball approaching 4,000 in variance. That's from the statement total to net ticket sales report. Not large variances, nothing to be concerned about. Can we move on to the TV?
Let's see if there are any questions.
Need
about
to
the
know if there are any questions. Anyone would like to discuss the report on the NCAA audit?
I had a quick question, and yes, I'm on page 17 of the NCAA report. I just wanted to make sure that I understood all of the terms that you're using. I'm looking at football, the column marked football. Ticket sales, I understand. Student fees are the fees paid by students every year that go into budget. Direct institutional support, does that mean base budget? Are those, is that the chunk that's allocated in base budget?
That is my understanding.
Okay.
And would you like, I'm sorry. Out of order.
Looking at Daryl Horn over there, yes, it's okay. it's the budgeted in comparison to number 8, which has to be a calculation in reflection of indirect costs.
Okay, and just...
Salaries? I would presume that's all salaries.
In number 7, we don't differentiate whether it's paying salaries or operating. But
So 7 is salaries and operating.
We do fund all increases in grants and aid for athletics, so you could easily correlate that with the grant and aid budget, the student aid budget on the next
okay,
line.
So
but
that
we don't.
All, so that all dumps
right.
into that point. Okay, thank you.
I would like to note, as we're looking at that page, that contributions apparently have really escalated over the last couple of years, especially with we're talking about a larger budget in the football area, and we've got almost $860,000 that was given in that year to help offset some cost.
And that all goes through that line, the contribution line, that's all going to be going through HAF, correct?
Through gift received.
Well, or gifts
directed to HAF.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a complication of several different accounting projects.
Okay. Okay.
Could be some HAF.
Well, they're processed like any other gift. They're
sure.
gift receiving and flow to HAF from for spending.
And WKU Foundation gifts to their enhancement
fund.
So it's a combination fund.
All right, so it can pass through there too. Thank you.
More questions? Call for vote.
I move to approve.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Now you can continue on your radio. We'll now move to item number 1.2. This has to do with the, as it is already pre-introduced, WKYUTD and WKYUFM. I hear a motion to bring this to the floor.
So moved.
Second.
All right, we have it on
The most important sentence in the agenda item, each of the financial statements received unqualified opinions. That's what this board needs to know first and foremost, but I'll let John walk you through the two audits.
Western Kentucky TV, again, this is an unqualified opinion. For those that are not familiar with audit opinions, unqualified means good. So it was clean. The financial statements are materially stated. We obtained sufficient audit evidence to support the balances. If we would like to, management provides us with an MD&A section, management discussion and analysis. If there are certain items that the committee would like to see, that's where we would need to communicate with management to put into the management discussion and analysis. If on page 3 of the financial statements, management provides fiscal year 2013 highlights. So that's where management has looked at the financial statements and said, these are the key areas that we'd like to highlight, that we would like to present. So if I just want to go down those four items, the station's net position, it increased 46,000. That's 3% year over year. The operating revenues decreased 8,000. That's 2% year over year. I'm on TV.
You're on TV.
Yes. Operating expenses, not including depreciation, decreased 468,000. That's 14% year over year. And net operating revenues decreased by 234,000. That's 8% year over year. So if there was any more information that the committee would like to see up front, it would need to be communicated to management, and management would be Emily England. She did a fantastic job on both TV and radio this year, along with Benji Harmon and his staff. And so it's been a pleasure working with them through these audits. That is all I have on the TV. Are there any questions?
Questions on television, on the gift station? It appears that they're operating very efficiently with the amount of resources that they have.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to note that Emily was new this year to management. She was preparing the financial statements this year, and she worked very closely with Benji on preparing these. So,
Any questions? You can move on. To radio. Did you want to do radio too?
Yes. Okay. Now on to radio. Again, this is a compliance audit. We do issue an audit opinion on the financial statements. This is unqualified as well. The financial statements are materially stated. These are required by the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. So we submit these financial statements onto their website, and they have to be approved by both management and the auditor. Again, I'll go over the financial highlights that management has provided on page 3 of the radio financial statements. The station's net position increased $265,000. That's 14%. The operating revenues decreased $12,000. That's 5.3%. Radio is a little smaller than the TV station. Operating expenses, excluding depreciation, decreased by $15,000. That's 0.8%. And non-operating revenues increased by $253,000. That's 14%. And that's all I've had. Are there any questions?
Once again, very impressive. Increased operating revenues and decreasing expenses is, I think that's what we're all trying to do.
You can thank your management for that.
That's exactly right. And that should be noted. That's not easy.
You might clarify, have these reports been, what was the deadline for CPB?
The deadline was, I believe, November 30th.
So we had a timing issue. I just wanted to let you know that we needed to go ahead and comply. This is on the agenda for you to accept the reports. So we did go ahead. Management went ahead to comply with CPB reporting requirements.
We've discussed this timing issue in the past about how we have to operate within the
boundaries. There were no fines or penalties upon submission.
Right. Okay. Do I hear a motion to accept the report of 1.2? Oh, I'm sorry, Kipati.
Sure, I had one question. I was looking over on pages 4 and 5 of the radio report.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Radio report, and there's a decline of about $60,000 over the last 2 years in revenues and grants and contracts.
Got a line item, or can you get us to there?
It appears on page 4 in the narrative about total operating revenues in the first paragraph under revenues, but you can also see it in the table on page 5 as well. I just wondered if there was any
non-operating on page 5. If you look at non-operating revenue, the third line down is grants and contracts, which is attributable to CPB.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mr. Brinkley was going to be here.
Yes,
please, Dave.
Over on the other side.
Yeah.
The federal government reduced the amount of money allocated as a part of the last recession.
Okay, thank you.
That's an ongoing challenge with public broadcasting, radio, and television, is the federal support for those programs is very tenuous. Every time there's a sequester or other belt-tightening measures in Washington, these programs are unfortunately a target.
Absolutely, and it's such an important outreach. Thanks.
That also puts a little pressure on your fundraising efforts as well, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. We're really enhancing those and stepping them up.
Good.
Thank you, Peg. Any other comments or questions on 1.2?
In conclusion, I would like for the 2014 audit, we're looking forward to it. Again, we'd like to welcome Brad. And I would say I'm sorry for the partner Pete Hugo that he's not here, but I can't say I'm sorry because he's with his family in Walt Disney World on spring break. So I can't apologize for him. He's having fun and we're working. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, John.
Motion to accept action item number 1.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second by Mr. Higdon. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Moving along. 1.3, acceptance of the filing of the second quarter statement of revenues and expenditures. Page 3 of the attached report. Motion to bring to the floor.
So moved.
Second.
Motion is on the floor. We proceed.
This is a six-month report. However, even with six-month reports, you can have variances as to what happens in December versus January in any different fiscal year, how students are, in fact, registering impacts, because we record your student tuition and fees based on billing, not on cash. So there are some variances. The quarterly report looks fairly similar to actually last year's. The growth in unrestricted expenditures mirrors the growth in revenue. They're both run about 6%. I'm going to address the tuition and fees in my update on the budget, so I'll defer any more on that. The restricted is down slightly from this time last year. However, remember, with restricted, it is equal to expenses. They don't overexpend. The same is true with auxiliaries, and as the president announced, I'm going to become very fluent in understanding auxiliaries and their variances in revenue, and surely I'll have more enlightening comments about auxiliaries the next time I meet with you. If there's any questions, let me know.
Comments or questions?
And let me ask one question. On the unrestricted revised budget second quarter compared to the actual, the $182 million, that is what was budgeted for or through the second quarter?
Okay, I remember, you have a private sector view of this, yeah. That's a little different than higher education. That $182 million is an annualized budget, and I apologize, since I probably should have made a change in that heading. That is the annualized budget, okay. So it is not a six-month budget.
All right, so we're 89.5% of the way.
Right,
there.
Okay. And that's a reflection that summer school is not a big driver to our revenue. Fall and spring is. But again, depending on when students register, mm-hmm. The semester started, Kiana, late January?
January 27th.
Mm-hmm. So we had a fair amount of students that procrastinated and didn't register till the first of the year, and that'll be reflected in the third quarter reports.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other comments? Don't want to rush anybody. This is important. Call for the question.
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion's passed. Now are we at the Bailey?
Personnel actions.
Personnel, okay. Go to 1.4, personnel actions, Ann.
As stated in the agenda, you have personnel actions that change the base salary of faculty and staff. You have in this agenda item promotions and tenure recommendations, and you have the one-time compensation payments that have been executed since your last board meeting. If there are any questions, most senior administrative officers are here to respond to the increases. Increases over 5,000 are addressed in your agenda materials. Stalling is I'm looking to see what page that's on.
Yeah.
But it is in it's page S6. No, it isn't S7.
S7.
Are the explanations for any increases greater than 5,000?
F4.
F4?
F4.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Patty. I'm sorry. Documenter, I apologize.
That's okay. I have a question about both F4 and S7. Dr. Chow?
Chow,
thank you. Could somebody explain that to us? That's a rather it's a rather complicated arrangement for faculty.
Dr. Bayless.
Yes.
Yes. So Dr. Chow is on a slightly unusual position where basically the university does not budget his entire salary. Mm-hmm. There is a salary that is agreed and is reasonable for a person of his stature.
Out of base budget.
So we base budget approximately 50% of it. And then if he's successful at getting external grants, mm-hmm. he can bring his salary up to the complete base salary.
Okay.
It sounds a little bit complicated, but it's a way of compensating very, very talented people from external sources that we couldn't otherwise do.
Okay.
Which is not an unusual circumstance for research-centered faculty.
I know what Dr. Chow does, but yeah. If you could explain for everybody else what his position is.
Okay, so Dr. Chow is now the head of ICET, the Institute for Combustion Science and Environmental Technology. He took over that position from Dr. Pan, who I think you all know. Dr. Pan built that institute. Dr. Chow is now taken over. He's putting his own sort of stamp on the institution, and he's doing a terrific job at it. I mean, he really is, again, he's a world-class scientist doing this cutting-edge research and being very successful at getting funding to do so. Are there any other questions? I'm happy to talk at length about Dr. Chow. Terrific guy.
John, I had one other question before Dr. Bayless sits down, because it was about your part of the house too.
Okay.
On S7, the compensation increases for William Hook and Doug Rohr.
Yes. So basically, again, this is an analogous situation.
Okay.
They are people who are out of the business world and. Their compensation at the university is less than they would have expected to get in business. But they are entrepreneurs, and they have shown the state what a great job they're doing at economic development. The state, as I think you know, has really sort of held up what they're doing at the Center for Research and Development as exactly how everyone should, overlay state programs, federal programs, and universities. Well, as a result of that, the state is giving them more money, salary, and it seems only reasonable that success be passed on to them. It's not costing the university anything. This is not using all of the extra funds from the state.
Part of their duties is to manage the Innovation and Commercialization Center, which is an initiative of the Kentucky Science and Technology Corporation.
That was my other question, what KSTC was.
And that's KSCT, yeah. Which is a state economic development enterprise. And so they work as much, well, not as much, but they're partially compensated by us and the Kentucky Science and Technology Corporation.
Okay, so those increases are being funded from KSTC.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
The only other thing I'd like to add to that is I don't have an issue at all with the explanation Dr. Bayless gave, but in the future, I would appreciate that sort of being labeled a little bit more efficiently and a little bit more detailed within this, because, like I said, I understand completely the verbal aspect of it, and I appreciate the explanation, but I would like to have that documented in the explanation in a little bit more detail. Thank you.
Oh, it's not a bad thing to talk about it. So, great. Thank you.
Yep.
Good. Thank you, James. Yes, I do think that would be very beneficial, and we certainly want to, when people are doing the right thing, we certainly want everybody to know that it is
exactly
the right thing rather than just where did it come from. So that's a good idea. Great idea. Any other comments on our approval of personnel matters? Entertain a motion.
I move to approve.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then we're back to Gord. Baby.
Yes, and we are going to, Jeff will defer that at this time. I joked before the meeting that if we're paying for Bailey Jordan's flight from Charlotte, perhaps we ought to get our money's worth and let him do the presentation, but I can jump in at the end if necessary. But I believe he'll land in Nashville at 10 o'clock, and you know the frustration of ending up in Chicago and can't get out. So what I would like to do is just defer that, allow us to go through academics and executive and see where we are in terms of completion before lunch. So thank you for doing that. So we'll go to budget update. There is no materials. Fact is, I just realized I didn't even have any notes. So it's an important topic, and I trust that I'll talk in some logical order on this one, but it would have been nice if I'd written some notes down last night. The first area I want to cover is an update on the fiscal year 14 budget. You've been copied on some campus communications. You knew as we finished last fall that we had a slight decline in enrollment that resulted in an approximately $1.6 million in a revenue shortfall. That shortfall did continue. The students didn't show up for the spring semester. They weren't here in the fall. That's why retention is so important. So at this point, we're projecting that the shortfall for the spring will probably be an equal amount. The senior administrative officers are working on budget reduction plans in the range of $3 million, and that is being factored into the next budget as a base budget reduction. While the division heads will, in fact, have to make reductions by June 30th to help us have a balanced budget. But how you reduce your budget on a non-recurring basis may be different than how you reduce your budget effective July 1. Sometimes for the fiscal year balance, June 30th, you'll have some lapsed salaries from a position that you may not have expected to be vacant. You may have what we've heard before, carry forward funds that you've been holding carefully in case you would have a budget reduction. So those are one-time sources that will allow us to balance the budget by June 30th. The $3 million is approximately a 2% reduction in the tuition that accrues centrally. So, depending on your audience, $3 million sounds daunting. As a CFO, 2% of revenue is unfortunate, but it's not insurmountable. It is unfortunate, again, after a series of budget reductions, whether, the state has taken our funds or not. But it does pose challenges, but the divisions are prepared to move forward July 1 with the base going down by $3 million. The president has also communicated with you that a key component of that reduction is the fact that we've started a process called RFP, Request for Proposals, to ask what the private sector could do to provide quality health care in our health services facility. That is estimated to be slightly more than $1 million that we subsidize health services beyond the revenue that they generate from office visits, x-rays, and other sources. So we're in the process of that RFP. That will go. We're shooting to have that on the street by about April 15th. And
again, to be clear, it's that $1 million-plus subsidy that we would direct toward our budget cut to reduce the budget cut for all divisions of the university. So that's the primary impetus for moving forward with the request for proposals for private sector management of our health services operations.
I have a question about that. Is this, have we looked into that before?
Yes, sir. The circumstances were significantly different. It was about 1988, 1999 that we decided to outsource our health services. But at that time, the building behind you, Academic Complex, had a small amount of space that was totally inadequate to operate a health clinic. So what we told the private sector is, please come in here. Not only do we not want to subsidize you, but we want you to build a new building and grow the program. It turned out for a variety of reasons that that was not feasible, in addition to poor management, and the company did eventually declare bankruptcy. We brought health services back in to self-operated, generated sufficient revenue, and proceeded with building our own facility. The real important information about student health services is that this is not our decision to use this as a strategy to meet our $3 million reduction is not a function of poor management, poor performance. They have, I don't even remember the numbers, they've probably more than doubled since they moved into their facility, they've probably more than doubled their patient volume. These are exceptionally talented individuals, and as you're aware, we're going to work with the potential contractor to do everything we can to ensure continued employment. So again, as the president indicated, this is part of the answer to the $3 million reduction. Moving into, are there any questions? Let me stop there.
To further clarify an answer to John's question, in 98-99, when we bid this, it was not being run very well, and we weren't billing for insurance, and it was a significant loss leader in the university budget.
That's true.
That RFP was won by Collegiant Healthcare, a nationwide healthcare operator on college and university campuses. They won the bid. And within about 2 years, they went bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And if they managed other accounts the way they managed ours, I understand why that happened. Mm-hmm. It was not a good marriage. And so we then brought it back inside and have managed it ourselves ever since. So Ann is right. And you all received information from me about that. This is all about a financial decision. And the difference this time is... all of the local healthcare providers are interested in bidding on this. It's a big difference. I would be surprised if there was a national higher ed healthcare provider that bids on this. I'm not aware of one. If there is,
we have not found someone that's in that's a private sector answer to college healthcare. So I've asked Grant, you know, Grant Thornton's a great resource, and I've asked them just to confirm in any context. They have a healthcare division, and I said, please, we want to make sure that we distribute the RFP to any appropriate potential bidders, and you're correct. Right now, we don't find anyone. We have found several universities across the nation that have partnered with local hospitals. It's not an unusual model.
Since we are talking about the budget, and I don't want this comment to come out any insensitive to the circumstances of those people who have done a great job of what we have. This is, again, something in under our area of budget and finance. But the question would be, and I think I know the answer in advance, if we have the facility and this is being bid, then there might be the possibility that it would be a revenue generator to offset some other costs, possibly?
We're being flexible in the RFP to allow them to describe the financial plan with an EG leasing facility, paying accumulated depreciation, potential revenue sharing of gross revenue. We're not going to restrict it so that we allow the maximum array of choices for any potential bidder. So that's all of them number one, the most important thing for moving forward for FY15 is our ability to reallocate slightly over $1 million to shore up the budget.
Yes, I understand that.
But paid for, and so they're either going to lease the building or share revenue with
That's more of
some
my
combination
question.
Of both.
Yeah, yeah. We're just not going to tell them.
The successful
them
bidder will be judged on what they bring to us.
And that business model will be important for the longevity of that revenue stream if it is there. So I just want
that
to have a lot of attention.
That's the second benefit for doing this. There should be a revenue stream.
Great.
Any more questions about fiscal year 14, the year we're in? Moving into fiscal year 15, the president will be giving you later under executive committee a legislative update. Obviously, a lot is happening this week, in the next day or so, perhaps. I heard on the radio that they are unplugging the clock, and I think I heard the Senate's not going home, but the House is, so I'm not exactly sure how free conference committee works. But what's critical to us in, one reason that we couldn't bring even a preliminary budget to you is that the House budget includes the reduction of approximately $1.8 million. The Senate doesn't. So you know how critical that is to balancing the budget. The other variable is within a few weeks, Mr. President, you're going to know what the maximum tuition rate increase that's going to be allowed by the CPE. So given that I don't know the state appropriation and I don't know what the tuition rate increase is, there isn't a whole lot I can do, but I'm making a model.
Sure, you know what the state appropriation will be.
Well, it may be $1,843,000 less. And we're modeling based on an assumption on the tuition revenue increase. So we have gone through the process and we have identified projected fixed cost increases for next year, and should be able to update you on the development of the FY15 budget soon.
And the question, what are your assumptions on enrollment tracking for next year?
We are building the budget based on fall 13 enrollment, plus a small increase that I'm assured will happen in the Navitas Pathway graduates that become WKU students. They're already here. There's a transition between the Pathway program into our program. But essentially, for the big picture, we're budgeting on fall of 13 enrollment.
Now, Dr. Meredith will give a report shortly on enrollment in the Academic Affairs Committee. So he'll give you what he sees the enrollment profile to be. But Ann's job is to be conservative, and we're going to build a budget based on what we know with current enrollment. We're not going to build a budget based on anticipated growth or decline, and that's the prudent way to go forward. And if enrollment grows, then we have revenue that we can do some things with. If it doesn't, then we'll be in the same situation we're in this year.
Gotcha.
Any questions about the fiscal year 15 budget?
Well, one item that we've discussed in your office, and I would like at some point, and again, I want to bring this up again in committee, that we talk about how we do these carry forward funds, because here we are talking about budget changes and so forth, and then I hear the word carry forward, and I still think that needs to be tightened up some. So I'd like to get that.
Your comment has sometimes been directed to the Division of Extended Learning and Outreach. Some of their carry forward is a result of what's called call them cohort programs. They're programs that are almost like an incubator program. Let's just see how successful we can be with a certain degree, a certain population, and several of those are being moved to the base budget, which means that they won't be in the division's carry forward. But that's good news. That carry forward is evidence of a lot of success stories, but we are going to take those success stories and convert them into base budgets.
Good. Thank you.
Just so everybody understands the terminology, what John's referring to, in about 14 years ago, we changed our budgeting structure
instead of spend it or lose it at the end of the year, and everything reverts back to the administration to divvy out. We switched our budgeting philosophy to you have your budget. If you don't spend all your budget, you keep what you don't spend and can spend it on one-time expenditures the following year. So it's be conservative, be frugal, and you're the beneficiary of your good financial management with your budget. Mm-hmm. Now, different divisions have managed it different ways and so forth, but that's the philosophy. And when we say we will balance the current year budget with carry-forward money, it means that some divisions will have to sacrifice some of their carry-forward funds in order for the university to have a balanced budget on June 30. The good news is we have a significant amount carried forward across the divisions and are able to do that. So that's how carry forward money works. The divisions are encouraged to spend your money wisely and accumulate some carry forward and use it wisely in the following year. But it's also a fallback for us for situations if a current year revenues fall short of balancing.
Any other comments on the informative items from Ann? Any other questions about Ann's department that we need to bring to the attention for future discussion? Ann, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that ends the Finance and Budget Committee report.
Thank you.